OU Israel presents.
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky. We did not have a show last week. We had one the week before for Sukkot. I don't know how many of you had a chance to hear it, but we are starting now the post-holiday season with Shabbat Parshat Noach and also Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. Having a Shabbat Rosh Chodesh sort of prolongs that feeling of all of the Shabbatot being special. In this year, 5768, we started with a Thursday, Friday, Rosh Hashanah, followed by Shabbat Shuva, certainly not a regular, normal Shabbat. The following Shabbat, the second of the year, was Yom Kippur. The third one was Shabbat Chol HaMoed, Sukkot. The fourth one was Shabbat Bereshit, which followed very soon after Shmini Atzeret / Simchat Torah. So it also didn't have the feeling of normalcy. Most people's Sukkot were still up in Chutz Laretz, no choice, and here in Israel you had a rush on Friday if you wanted it down by Shabbat, which I did not succeed in doing, nor did I try very hard, but I did manage on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday to finally get it all down and away. And then we come to this Shabbat, the fifth already of the year, 5768, out of 355 Shabbatot, as a matter of fact. And this fifth one is still not regular and normal because it combines Parshat Noach, the Parsha of the week, with Rosh Chodesh. It means we take out a second Sefer Torah on Shabbat and we read the special Maftir for Rosh Chodesh. And the Haftarah is the one for Shabbat Rosh Chodesh. And I have a lot to say about that. I also would like to play a slightly abridged and edited version of Bill Cosby's famous routine of Noah and analyze a few points in it. I found the overall flavor very humorous, sometimes profound, and sometimes in error, not in any kind of offensive way. I'm sure many of the listeners are familiar with this Bill Cosby routine, but I do have a recording of it, and I would like to play it and then refer to certain parts of it. In the second half of the show, I'd like to play a shiur I gave to the Torah Tidbits folders earlier today, and it brings up other items and issues in Parshat Noach, and especially in contrast and side by side with the concept of Rosh Chodesh. There are certain pointers towards our dual membership as Jews in the human race as well as in the Jewish nation. And there are a lot of people that make the mistake in thinking they are Jewish as opposed to being humans, and it's just not true. And it's very important that we take our membership in the human race as seriously as we do take our Judaism. But before that, let us just say that recording and first broadcast is Thursday, Yom Chamishi of Shabbat Parshat Noach, Shabbat Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan. Rosh Chodesh is 2 days this month. Friday, Erev Shabbat, is the first day of Rosh Chodesh, being the 30th day of Tishrei, 5768, and Shabbat itself is the first day of Cheshvan. The phenomenon of Rosh Chodesh falling on the same on Shabbat is not very rare. It happens at least twice and sometimes three times every year. This year it will happen three times, and this is the first one coming up. The secular date is the 11th of October. Tomorrow on the calendar should have been October 12th, which of course it is. That should have been Columbus Day, and I was surprised to hear from someone I spoke to yesterday that they've already celebrated Columbus Day as this past Monday because of the way that dates have been shifted to convenient days of the week to combine with a weekend. So whatever Happy Columbus Day means, you either had it or you didn't have it or you don't have it, but I thought I'd make a comment about it nonetheless. Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuf Lamed. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shimavakoli tehiyena aznecha kashivot lakol tachanunai. Imavonot tishmarya Adonai miya'amod ki imacha haslicha lama'an tivarei. Kiviti Adonai kiveta nafshi velidvaro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonai mishomerim laboker shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. Vehu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara uvashivya haomedim bein bayom bayam uvein bayabasha hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem mitzara lirvacha umeafela l'ora umishibud l'geula hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. Now, I've cut down the Bill Cosby routine to about 5.5 minutes. I'm going to play them continuous and then refer to different parts of it. I did remove one section of it, the one where his neighbor comes out of the house and sees this massive construction, which is partially blocking his driveway. There's a little funny scene there. But it's not one of the things that I felt necessary to put together to convey the humor of Bill Cosby with this routine, as well as touch upon certain points that are brought up. So, with apologies for the Bill Cosby purists, you can go on to the internet and find various versions of the Bill Cosby routine. Noah, I knew it as Noah and the Lord, but apparently it's called just Noah. And I present my slightly modified, I pulled out some pauses, I pulled out some of the laughter and applause just to make it a little bit shorter, and I hope we'll have some meaningful comments to make following the Bill Cosby piece.
There's a fellow by the name of Noah, built an ark. Everybody knows he built an ark. He said, what did Noah do? He said, well, he built an ark. But very few people know about the conversation that went on between the Lord and Noah. You see, Noah was in his rec room sawing away. He's making a few things for the home there. He's a good carpenter. It's vuba, 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 vuba. Noah. Somebody call? Vuba, vuba, vuba. Noah. Who is that? It's the Lord, Noah. Right. Where are you? What do you want? I've been good. I want you to build an ark. Right. What's an ark? Get some wood, build it 300 cubits by 80 cubits by 40 cubits. Right. What's a cubit? Well, don't worry about that, Noah. When you get that done, go out into the world, collect all of the animals in the world by twos, male and female, and put them into the ark. Right. Who is this really? What's going on? How come you want me to do all these weird things? I'm going to destroy the world. Right. Am I on candid camera? How you gonna do it? I'm going to make it rain for 1,000 days and drown them right out. Right. Listen, do this, you'll save water. Let it rain for 40 days and 40 nights and wait for the sewers to back up.
Right.
Of course, Noah had a heck of a job, really. He had to go out and collect all of the animals in the world by twos, two mosquitoes, male or female. And he had to keep telling the rabbits, only two, only two, only two. Find Noah pulling up the last two animals, two hippos, and he's really in a hurry to get them up because he's afraid that the Lord's going to call him and ask him to do something else, and his nerves are shot. This is one heck of a job for a man 600 years old. So we find him pulling up the last two hippos, and of course the Lord does call him there. Come on, fat hippos, hurry up. Come on, will you please? Noah.
What?
What do you want?
Gotta take one of those hippos out and bring in another one.
What for?
Because you got two males down there and you need to bring in a female.
I'm not bringing nothing in. You change one of them.
Come on, you know I don't work like that.
Well, I'm sick and tired. I've had enough of this stuff. I've been working all day, working on for days and days. I'm sick and tired of this.
Noah?
Yeah?
How long can you tread water?
Yeah, well, I got news for you. I'm sick and tired of this whole mess. The whole neighborhood's out there laughing at me. You're all having a grand time at good old Noah there. I went out and got my best friend, Larry. I said, Larry, listen, I've been talking with the Lord. Larry said, oh, really? I said, yeah, yeah. Lord, Larry, Larry, Lord, you walked over there laughing. I hear them all up there laughing at me. You know I'm the only guy in this neighborhood with an ark. People around there laughing, picket signs, walking up and down. I'm sick and tired of this stuff here. People are walking around there. How you doing, Tarzan? How do you doing out there? Sick and tired of this mess here. You're supposed to know all and see all. You let me go out there and bring in a pregnant elephant. You give me no manual for delivery and nothing. Never told me the thing was pregnant. Ask good old Noah waiting underneath the elephant there. Broom, right on top of the elephant. All that stuff for you running around. You're supposed to know all and see all. Like I said before, you let me go out there and do all this stuff here. You never even looked in the bottom of that ark. Have you looked down there? No. Who's going to clean up that mess down there? That's me. I'll tell you that. I've had enough of this. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm letting all these animals out, and then I'm going to burn down this ark, and I'm going to Florida somewhere because you haven't done nothing. I'm sick and tired of all this mess. You're fooling around, and you haven't done nothing except, and you got it raining. It's not a shower, is it? Okay, Lord, me and you, right? Because I knew all the time.
All right, let's take a look at some of the different pieces here. First of all, the ark's measurements, according to the Torah, were 300 cubits, so he got that right, by 50 cubits by 30 cubits. For some reason, he used the numbers 80 and 40, which just aren't correct. That's certainly not a big deal. Then there's the way that Cosby describes Noah's first reaction to hearing the Lord's voice. The Torah tells us that God said to Noah, and Noah responded, and they had a conversation. But when one tries to imagine what it's like to be spoken to, communicated with directly by God, one wonders if a person questions his sanity, questions the source of his perception of a voice. And I think a comedian like Bill Cosby can only portray it that way. I don't find it offensive or anything like that. But I do imagine a prophet even questioning. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu challenged his own prophecy, and so did Yeshayahu, and we don't have details as to how other prophets necessarily reacted the first time they received a message from God. And certainly not being the principal in a situation of prophecy or communication with God, it's difficult to imagine what it's like. Like, how do you know you're really hearing God's voice and not just hearing voices in a psychiatric kind of situation? I don't know. The best answer I have is, if it happens, you know, and there's no doubt. But apparently, Cosby felt there was, and that's the crack about Candid Camera, which was, I found very funny. And, as the Torah says, and Noah complied with everything that God had commanded him, apparently in Cosby's portrayal of Noah, that Noah also did all that God told him. I found even Noah's suggestion, rather than letting it rain for 1,000 nights or days, but let it rain for 40 days and 40 nights, which is how the Torah describes the flood happening. But the Torah also describes how the waters that fell from the heavens were added to waters from the ground. And in Cosby's humorous way, he referred to that as the sewers backing up, and that certainly contributed to the effect of the flood. So I found that particular comment online. One of my very favorite exchanges between Noah and the Lord in this routine, which I find extremely important and profound, and I've always wondered if Cosby really thought it out, because I've used it a lot of times in Shiurim and other talks, is when the Lord tells Noah to take out one of the hippopotamuses and bring in another. Cosby asks why he should do that, and the answer is they're both male, and one of them has to be female. So Cosby said, so why don't you change one of them? And God's answer is, come on, you know I don't work like that. I thought it was a very good line. I thought, based on the soundtrack or the laugh track and the audience reaction, whether it was actual or mechanical, downplayed that. But I think it's the most brilliant line in the whole routine, which is why I'm even including it in a Torah Tidbits audio. Because the answer is, God does not usually work like that. He has the ability, according to our picture of God. I use the term picture in quotes, obviously, because we don't have a picture. But our description of God would definitely include the ability and the power to change a male hippopotamus into a female. And yet, God chooses not to work like that. This idea, by the way, sort of dovetails into a major issue with the whole episode of Parshat Noach and the flood. Let's take it to the extremes. God had several ways of going about his plan to destroy the world, with the exception of Noach and those who were with him in the Teva, meaning Noach, his wife, who by our tradition was called Naama, and his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Yefet, and their wives, for whom we don't have names, and the representative samples of all of the animal species, not counting the fish, who survived under the ark, etc., etc. God could have accomplished his intention with a snap of a divine finger, meaning in an instant, of a split second, the entire world and all the people in it and all the animals in it would be destroyed, with the exception of Noah and those with him, and the samples of each animal. Done. It's done in a split second. That would have been totally God's doing, and then Noah would have awakened one morning to realize that everyone else in the world is dead, and he would be commanded to start populating the world again, as Noah received the command of Pru Urvu and continues from there. God did not do it that way. Nor did he give Noah the entire task without divine help. One needs to contemplate any of the aspects of what we read about in Parshat Noach. Let's take the Cosby comment about, did you see the bottom of the ark? Who's going to clean up that mess? A very funny line. But it didn't happen because nature was suspended during the year's duration of the flood. animals did not behave like they usually behave. I heard another comedy routine about the number of zebras that Noah had to keep bringing onto the ark, because every time he brought a pair, the lions and the other predators would eat them, and he'd have to bring more. It didn't happen. The lions did not have to be caged and kept away from the zebras. The lions did not eat during that period of a year's worth of lion food, nor did the elephants consume what they usually consume. I don't know. I can't tell you how much elephant food and how much lion food and how much monkey food, etc., etc., there was. I could tell you what the verses say in the Torah, that God said, collect food for all of the animals and for yourselves and bring it onto the ark, which Noah did. But he certainly was helped to a tremendous extent by the miraculous nature of the whole flood experience, because it could not possibly be done by human beings alone. An ark of 300 cubits by 50 cubits by 30 cubits is an undertaking, a major undertaking on the part of Noah. And as Cosby jokingly says, what do you expect from a guy 600 years old? But it would not be enough to house all of the animals, and yet it did. So there was your miracle. Well, if it's a miracle, then why bother building a 300 by 50 by 30 cubit teva when he could have taken a matchbox and miraculously all the animals could have survived in a matchbox? Because God does not work like that. There has to be, or there is, doesn't have to be, there is some kind of balance between the miraculous and that which human beings could perceive and understand and learn lessons from it. Noah needed to roll up his sleeves and be involved in this project for many reasons, one of which is not like Cosby described in that neighbor piece, where Noah didn't tell the neighbor what was going to happen. He just gave him a hint when he was asked. But he was supposed to tell people, God is going to destroy the world because of our behavior, because of your behavior, and give people a chance to repent. This can't happen if God was ready to destroy the world with a snap of a finger. So it's some kind of blend between the two, and I think this will have to suffice for now. There are other elements of the routine that I would like to comment on, but I will leave it for now with that and say that shortly we will continue with other aspect of Shabbat Parshat Noach, which happens to be Rosh Chodesh as well. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Noach, and in the first part of the show we used the Bill Cosby Noah routine as a springboard to make certain comments. I believe very firmly that any discussion about Parshat Noach should start with something like the Cosby routine. It helps people get into the topic in a relaxed way. I don't think we did full justice to it, but we'll have to do that some other time. Next, as I mentioned earlier, is an edited version of a shiur that I gave to the Torah Tidbits folder earlier today, which was an expansion of what I wrote as the lead tidbit in this week's Torah Tidbits. It's something that I hope I got the point across a little bit better than in writing, not just because I didn't have the room for it in written Torah Tidbits, but there were certain ideas which I've tried to express in different ways. But to me it's an important opportunity of a combination of Shabbat and Rosh Chodesh on the one hand, and Shabbat and the reading of Noach on the other, and it allows a certain look that you don't get when they are not overlapping. It goes like this. Shabbat Parshat Noach, especially that it's Rosh Chodesh this year, says two things at the same time, and we have to look at the messages separately but together. One message is Noach. B'nai Noach, all human beings on earth started out as B'nai Noach. Even before that, they were B'nai Adam. We still use the term today, Ben Adam. Ben Adam is a mensch, a person, but the name that perpetuated because of what happened in the first 10 generations and the almost total destruction of the Mabul is that it's really through Noach that mankind continued. True, Adam HaRishon was the first, and Noach was a descendant of Adam HaRishon, but you get a sense when you read the Torah this week that things are starting again. Just like God said right at the beginning to Adam, Pru Uravu Umilu et Aretz v'chivshuha, be fruitful and multiply and populate the world, so too did he have to say that again to Noah. Because Noah witnessed total destruction, utter destruction, and death, and here he is, essentially the Adam HaRishon of the post-flood era, Adam Sheni, if you want to call him that. We don't. We call him Noach. And it's happening again. God is saying, all right, let's do it again and let's do it better. Or, you know, let's try to shape up. We shipped out already, but we're trying to shape up. So we read Parshat Noach. We listen to Parshat Noach, or we should listen to it as not yet the special subgroup of human beings that we like to think of ourselves and consider ourselves to be the Jewish people, but we are members of the human race. It is true that the term Ben Noach will heretofore be applied to all non-Jews, and Bnei Yisrael is the name that we call ourselves, but if we are looking in the Torah and trying to recapture the way it was laid out in the first place, then we are now reading the Sedra that Avraham Avinu only shows up at the very end, just like in the end of Bereshit, Noach showed up at the very, very end. And we could say, okay, let's go back in time and take another look at what happened to set things in motion the way we know them today. So I believe that we have to look at Parshat Noach and at Noach and on the generations that flowed from him. And that was a real classic Freudian slip. The nations that came from him, the 70 nations, it has always struck me as no coincidence that the Jewish people started as 70 souls, the Shivim Nefesh that went down to Mitzrayim with Yaakov, and the world started with the 70 nations that came from Noah. The 70 nations were 70 people. And if you look in this week's Torah Tidbits, there's an actual count that's based on Rav Aryeh Kaplan's Living Torah, where he actually numbers them. Yes. And if you try to do it on your own, you sort of don't end up with 70. So
I know it's
hard, but I like numbers in general, as everybody knows, and it worked out very neatly to be able to not quite give a family tree, but give a running flow of the generations and the names. And when Mitzrayim to us is a nation that oppressed the Jewish people, Mitzrayim as a nation began with Mitzrayim as a person, one of the descendants of Noach. So it gives a certain look, and then that leads you into looking at Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, the seven Noahide laws, as they are called, where we are seeing what we believe is the basic guidelines for a humane, moral society, which we would like the whole world to be. It makes it a lot better to live as a Jew if the environment that we have of an overwhelming majority of non-Jews in this world would be humane and moral people. And we believe that the way to be that is by an adherence to Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. So we're looking at it from that perspective, not saying that's them, but that is them and part of us, because every person, and that's what I meant by the title of the lead tidbit, which is to be a person and to be a Jew. One should not say, I am a Jew and I'm not a person. I'm a human being. And that's why you have the famous statement, Derech Eretz Kodma La Torah, that one way of explaining Derech Eretz is common decency and manners and way people should behave comes before the Torah. Because we were B'nai Noach before we were B'nai Yisrael. And B'nai Yisrael I always look at as a golden credit card, which you didn't relinquish your first credit card. You are a member of the human race. We are members of the human race, and we are Jews. The Jew side of this lesson for this Shabbat comes from the fact that it's also Rosh Chodesh. Because there is no greater example, paradigm. Rosh Chodesh means HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, which Rashi has pointed out and everyone else points out was the first mitzvah presented to the almost but not yet nation of Israel. And it defines our Judaism. Shabbat, which, by the way, is very essential here in Parshat Noach, even though, of course, its source is in Parshat Bereshit, but there's a very crucial verse in Noach, as long as I'm opening that door, let me go back to it for a second. In nature, and I've always found this interesting, that if you take a look at any unit of time can be divided into two categories. I say two with an asterisk next to it because there's really a third category. One category of units of time is based on nature. The earth on which we live rotates on its axis and completes one complete rotation in a day. A day, be it 24 hours or 23 hours and 56 minutes, there are different ways of calculating the length of time of a rotation. It is a natural, meaning connected to nature, unit of time. As opposed to hour, which is a creation of human beings to subdivide a day into manageable units of time called an hour. Why they originally, whoever chose 24 is another issue. And the division of minutes and the division of seconds and then milliseconds and microseconds and now nanoseconds are all subdivisions of the natural unit of time called a day. Even though many units of time have picked up a different definition, also interestingly associated with nature. In other words, a second might be the length of time it takes a certain atom or molecule to vibrate a certain number of times, but that really came after the idea. The idea of a second was a subdivision of a minute, and a minute a subdivision of an hour a subdivision of a day, and a day is a natural thing. So too is a month. The time it takes the moon to go through its phases, be it 27 days or 29 days or 29 days, 12 hours and 44 minutes in one chelek, which is 3 1/3 seconds, or slightly different calculations depending on how you want to calculate. It is a natural unit of time. The fact that it takes approximately 29 or 30 days to happen is a way of correlating the day to the month, but the unit of a month is a pure natural unit. And the third natural unit in that category is a year. A year is the time it takes the Earth-Moon system to revolve around the sun. And it's roughly 365 1/4 days, give or take, literally. And that has been fine-tuned and polished. And 10 years is a decade, but a decade is not a natural unit of time. It's a multiple of a year and a century and a millennium, etc., etc. Although I don't know what etc. there are. So there are one category of units of time is... One category is natural. It includes day, month, and year. The other category of time are the subdivisions or multiples of existing units, which are your hours, minutes, seconds, and fractions of seconds, your decades, centuries, millennium. And with months, again, having 12 months in a year is a way of correlating the natural unit of the month to the natural unit of a year. They don't correlate perfectly. That's why it's not exactly 12 months, or that's why months have to have in the secular calendar 30 days or 31 days and sometimes 28, one of them, and sometimes that has 29. That was all to make the adjustments so that there is a better correlation between the number of months and the year. If you remember, I put an asterisk, a virtual figurative asterisk, next to the number two categories of units of time, because there's really a third unit that doesn't belong to either of the first two, and that is the week. The week is 7 days, and if you look at it like that, it's a multiple of a day, but we know that that's not where it came from. 10 might have been a better idea if you needed a multiple. Have a decaday, which would, you know, you want to call a week, you could call a week, I don't care, but it would be a multiple of the day. A week is not, in our way of looking at it, a multiple of a day. It's not a fraction of a month. It's not part of a year. It is its own unit, and it is based on creation of the world by God. So I wouldn't put it into that first category of a natural phenomenon of the rotation of the earth or the revolution of the moon or the revolution of the earth around the sun. And I certainly would not put it as a multiple of anything, even though it is neatly made up of 7 days, we know that its existence comes from creation of the world. Therefore, if you look just in Parshat Bereishit, God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh. Al Kain Beirach Hashem. I'm jumping now to Parshat Yitro, not to Bereishit, but Al Kain Beirach Hashem et Yom HaShabbat VaYikasheu. Therefore, He blessed the seventh day and sanctified it. But as such, because its origin is the creation of the world, logic would say all human beings should have Shabbat. And I'm not talking about the fact that some religions have Sunday as a day of rest and another religion has Friday as whatever they call it, and some actually have our Shabbat as a day of rest. I'm talking about our Shabbat, where our Shabbat is Beini Uvein Bnei Yisrael Ot Hi Leolam. God is saying the Shabbat is an eternal sign of the relationship between me, capital M, and the people of Israel. How come God didn't say Shabbat, which is based on creation of the world, is a sign of a relationship between God and all the people of the world? The answer is, I believe, at least in our way of looking at it, that's how God originally wanted it. When God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh, it was not the Jewish people that were influenced, affected, commanded on Shabbat. There were no Jewish people. So let's say that was God's plan. I don't know if Adam, we know that Shabbat meant something to Adam Arishon. The Gemara tells us various things about it, and we even attribute Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbat, Psalm 92, which is the Shir Shalayom of Shabbat. It is attributed to Adam Harishon. Not that he sat down and wrote Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbat Tov Lo Dot Lashem, but that idea is considered that old, because it was Shabbat that meant something to Adam Harishon in perspective of the creation of the world. Where did we go wrong, we meaning all the people of the earth? Well, we just read it last week. There was a deterioration over the generations from creation until Noah. And at that point, God said, forget it. This is not going to work. Not that I'm talking in human terms now, but it's as if He said, this is not going to work. and I'm going to destroy the world, but Noach matza chen beinai, Noach found favor in my eyes, and I will keep him alive, and his wife, and three sons, and their wives, and he'll be instructed to build an ark, and take in two animals of each kind, and seven pairs of each kosher animal, and food for all the animals, and he will survive the Mabul. And then again it happened. But with Noach and his generation and the ones that followed, the pasuk in Parshat Noach says, God made a, let's call it a strategic decision, that from this point on, Laila v'yom, night and day, or day and night, and cold and warm and seasons, lo yishbotu, will not rest. It'll be now a natural world that is for everybody, and it wasn't until we came around, the Jewish people, beginning with Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and then developing into a nation, to stand at Sinai, that God should say to us, Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho, through that, anybody in the world, even non-Jews, who accept the notion of a creation, also read the Bible where it says, because I created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh, therefore I have blessed the seventh day and made it holy. But it's still a matter of the rest of the world looking on, as the Torah says, it is we who have this relationship with God, and Shabbat is a sign of that covenant with us. And a non-Jew is not supposed to keep Shabbat. But I find it ironic, because Shabbat exists in the world. The idea is that the unit of time, which we take as most precious, we don't have any claims to a day. We mark a day with davening three times a day, and we're well aware of sunrise, and we're well aware of sunset, and our whole Jewish life includes an attention to what's day and what's nighttime, and months, of course, are very important to us. And but the special unit that we consider to be ours is the week, the Shabbat. The term Shabbat is not only the seventh day of the week; it refers to the whole week, but also months. And that gets me back online with this Shabbat Rosh Chodesh. It's a wonderful combination, because it's different, but it continues. God said, okay, look at it like this. I created the world, you didn't. I created the world and rested on the seventh. And because of the way things happen, you are the ones who will keep Shabbat the way I want to, and this will be an eternal covenant between us and a sign between us. But he also said to us, because of your Egyptian experience and the impending Yetziat Mitzrayim, it is important that HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem Rosh Chodeshim, this month be for you the first of the months, so that you will always have not just a focus on creation of the world, but you will have a focus on Yetziat Mitzrayim. Now, of course, there's overlapping here, because we refer to Shabbat also as Zecher LiYetziat Mitzrayim, but the real Zecher LiYetziat Mitzrayim is our cycle of holidays. Those don't exist without HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem, without setting up the calendar, without recognizing Nisan as the first of the month, without the observance of the holidays. These are ours. So, is there a Shabbat in other cultures? Yes. Is there a Saturday in other places? Practically all of them, unless they've taken the revolutionary or novel approach to trying to make, which people have tried over the years, a 10-day week with a 3-day weekend. Instead of working 5 days and taking off 2 days, they want them to have working 7 days and taking off three, and then there would be 3 weeks, or they would call it something else in a month, or they would call that something else, I don't know, and that would be 30 days. And they would have all months uniform at 30 days, and at the end of 12 of those months, there would be 5 special extra vacation days, which are not part of a month. They just are put there, and that was the suggestion for a new revolutionary calendar. I think it's part of the enduring power of belief in creation of the world by God, that all cultures have basically said, we'll do fine with this seven-day week. And even if everybody in the world changes, we won't, because we still have Sheshet Yamim, Ta'aseh Melacha, Uvayom Hashvi, Shabbat Lashem Elokecha, etc., etc. So that's the story. But when it comes to Shabbat Rosh Chodesh, it's a powerful combination. Especially, I say again, in reflecting in Parshat Noach, which points us towards our membership in the human race, and Shabbat Rosh Chodesh, for both of those, which point us in our membership, towards our membership of the Jewish nation, and we end up being able to contemplate them both alternately and together and separately, and one at 10 o'clock in the morning and another at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and to just look at them both side by side. I think it's an important message. On that note, I have just enough time to wish you a Shabbat Shalom, a Chodesh Tov, and Lehishtameach.